For getting to the point, the Gospel of Mark is hard to beat. What takes 11 verses in Matthew's Gospel and 13 verses in Luke's Gospel, Mark gets done in 2. That's right, the temptation in 2 verses. And the Spirit immediately drove him out into the wilderness. He was in the wilderness 40 days, tempted by Satan, and he was with the wild beasts, and the angels waited on him. It's almost asking us to boil it down further. Spirit-driven, wilderness, 40 days, tempted, Satan, beasts, angels. As if to make this morning's gospel procession worthwhile, the framers of the Revised Common Lectionary included the verses on either side of the temptation, even though we've just heard both of those sections from Mark's first chapter in the last several weeks. But there is something about the stark brevity of Mark's gospel that is compelling to me. It's as if the author doesn't have much time for the niceties, as if they're working to deadline. And the result is just the facts, ma'am. Because it's in the very verse that follows Jesus' baptism, with the voice from heaven still ringing in our ears, that the Spirit immediately drives Jesus into the wilderness. And just that word, drive, in and of itself, is fascinating and strange and is very much in keeping with the intensity of Mark's gospel. You see, in the other two gospel accounts of this scene, Matthew and Luke, the ones we hear on the other first Sundays of Lent, Jesus is led into the wilderness. Not here. Not with Mark. Here Jesus is driven out. Here the Greek is ekbalo, to throw out or to cast out into the wilderness. Who does that? Why would this lovey-dovey Spirit drive Jesus into a dry and dangerous wilderness? What is God up to in all of this? Well, just as a shepherd in Palestine employs both a crook to nudge the sheep back into place, as well as a bag of rocks to throw at their hooves to get them moving, I have to say that it rings true for me that this same Spirit who descends gently like a dove also acts as a force to drive Jesus into the wilderness. Because even though I like to believe that life can be lived in a weekly schedule, attending to details, setting medium and long-term plans and achieving goals, I know that we cannot live on iCal alone. And that often the checklists, the multitudes of activity, and the ever-rushed pace of Bay Area life simply serves to cover over what truly needs to be attended to: the work of the soul. This is why the Spirit drives Jesus into the wilderness of the desert. Because if Jesus of Nazareth or any of us of Berkeley are going to change the world, we must first attend to that change within. Before we make right the wrongs of the world around us, we have to get right within us. This isn't just Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror wisdom. It has been true of ages, and not just the new ages, like that of Deepak Chopra's newest book. No, this is a truth that solitaries, monks, nuns, pilgrims of all sorts have been seeking for millennia. For it is in wilderness that we are forced into that kind of space in which we must listen to the voice within. And this is where Mark's language, brief as it is, captures the essence of what this encounter is like. Because I cannot speak to the literal nature of Satan's temptation, or to what threats these wild beasts presented, or to the tangible effects of angelic ministration. But this dramatic language remarkably shows the power and the potency of spiritual testing in the wilderness. In the wilderness, especially in the desert, there seems to be nothing but space. External distractions, well, they are hard to come by. There is no Twitter feed there. There are no pings of texts received. Facebook updates are hard to come by. Super PACs can't buy airtime there, thanks be to God. In the wilderness, you're unlikely to hear whether the Dow has once again crossed 13,000. You will know, however, that you have reached the wilderness when the quiet is deafening. For then what you will hear will come from within. The wild beasts will be there, probably not prowling on the outside, though certainly lurking within. And you will receive care from the most unlikely of sources. This interior wilderness of the soul can feel just as dangerous as the Arabian desert. But friends, the good news is that when we enter it, when we enter this wilderness, we will be given all that we need. And to get where we're going in Lent, we must enter it. First, a word or two about Lent. I realize that the Episcopal Church, especially All Souls Parish, is a somewhat unusual combination of former Lutherans and Methodists, Southern Baptists and Roman Catholics, alongside cradle Episcopalians and converts to the Christian faith. And mixed up in all of this are the many perceptions about how one is supposed to act in order to practice a proper Lent. Often, one of those proper ways of practicing Lent involves unyielding deprivation and relentless scourging of the soul. If it doesn't hurt, you're not trying hard enough. Friends, no matter your practice this season, remember this. We are a people of the resurrection. We are a people of the resurrection. No matter how many litanies we chant, this truth remains. No matter how many Kyries we intone, this truth remains. And in order to get to the resurrection, we must first walk the road to Jerusalem. We cannot find the empty tomb without spending time at the foot of the cross. And the cross is not our final destination. The bizarre and even more troubling truth of the resurrection is. So whatever your practice is this Lent, ask yourself, how is it preparing you for Holy Week and for Easter? How is it helping you to come close to the mystery? As Kristen preached a few days ago on Ash Wednesday, our practices of almsgiving, of prayer, and of fasting may indeed look different in the 21st century than it did in the first. Our being driven into the wilderness is unlikely to contain a real wild beast or even a grain of sand. But make no mistake, the wilderness beckons. We still must enter it, make space for it, pull back from the distractions that tug at our mental and emotional shirt sleeves with every alert and update. But our disciplines, our regular practices must be ones that bring us closer to that mystery. For some, and I hope many, this year it will involve our corporate practice of telling our own stories of racism as part of our Lenten series, We Cannot Walk Alone. Every Wednesday night for 5 weeks, we will be hearing from members of this parish family as we tell stories of our own experiences of racism. We will then be engaging in conversation so as to absorb the pain that has been felt and together look for the hope of what is to come. And if you are still looking for something to give up, allow me to offer a suggestion. Often when we spend time in this wilderness, if we are there long enough, we encounter old wounds, the scars of broken relationships, debts earned but still unforgiven. Make this the Lent, that you give up holding on to that which is serving little good. Those grudges, those gnawing feelings of distrust, the bitterness that often hangs around our necks like millstones. This will not be easy. I, for one, am well used to walking around carrying this weight. It is hard for me to imagine walking this road without it. But I also know that every step that I take, that we take, bearing this weight further deforms us. And as we approach this Holy Week and Easter, consider beginning this process of reconciliation. I speak now on behalf of all of the clergy of this parish, the priests and the deacons of All Souls, to say that we will be honored to walk alongside as you prepare to lay these burdens down. For we do not walk in this wilderness alone. There is a persistent story that is told by many of the desert fathers and mothers, the Abbas and Ammas, who followed their call with Christ by retreating to the deserts of the Middle East and of North Africa. Life as a desert ascetic was harsh and could be tremendously isolating, for the desert is dangerous both day and night, and from it there is little relief. This story, told by many, goes something like this. A monk had been living in a cell carved from the hill of the desert for some time. But finally, the monk could face it no longer. He began to pack up the few items that he had with him. His knife, his bowl, the skin for his water. And as he did this, he had a vision. In front of him, he saw himself also packing up all of his belongings. He stared at this vision in absolute disbelief. His mirror image turned towards him and said, "If you're leaving on my account, don't bother. I'll be with you wherever you go."